I walk softly. I carry a big staff. Found that in the children's ministry department. A lot of props over there. All right. Well, there was a blind man who had his soul restored by Jesus. He was blind from very birth. He carried blindness throughout his life. And the people wanted to know, the disciples wanted to know, who sinned? Was it this guy that sinned? Or was it his parents? And Jesus said, nobody sinned. This isn't about sin. This is that the glory of God may be revealed in this man's life. And this was the highlight of this man's life being restored in Jesus. Jesus spit. He made some mud. He put it on the man's eyes. He told the man to go wash in the pool. And the people couldn't believe it. When he came back, he could see for the first time in his life. And they brought him to the religious leaders, and the religious leaders got kind of upset because Jesus did this on the Sabbath day. You're not supposed to do things like this on the Sabbath day. You're not supposed to work. And Jesus worked. He performed a miracle. And the Pharisees wanted to know about this. They asked the man, and the man said, I believe Jesus is a prophet. And the Pharisees said, no, he's not a prophet. He is not from God at all. He can't be from God because he wouldn't be working on the Sabbath if he was from God. And this man actually kind of put himself out there because he could get expelled from the synagogue by saying that Jesus was a prophet, by saying that Jesus was the Messiah. But he did. And they asked the man, how did this happen? How did you come to the place where you can see now? And he said, I've already told you. Jesus did this to me. Jesus made me see again. They just didn't get it the first time. Maybe you've been like that in the past. I know I have. I heard something spiritual, but just didn't sink in the first time. Well, they threw the guy out. They threw him out. And while he was out, Jesus came to him, and Jesus revealed himself to this man. Now, Jesus didn't go around telling everybody that he was the Christ at first. But he let this man know. He said, I am the Christ. And this man believed in the identity of Jesus, who Jesus was. And not only did he have his physical sight now, he had his spiritual sight. It's a beautiful scene in the book of John. And I told you that story because the story that we're going to read later comes right after that. And I think it's important that we see what was happening before the story that we're going to look at. In John 9 and 39 and 41, this is what Jesus says after he healed the blind man, after he came to Jesus spiritually as well. He says, I came into the world to bring everything into the clear light of day, making all the distinctions clear so that those who have never seen will see, and those who have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind. So Jesus uses this opportunity of this man now seeing as a bigger truth, that there are some people in this world who are blind and continue to be blind to the truth, and there are others who may see the clear light of day through the light of Jesus. That's important. So the Pharisees overheard him, and they said, does this mean that you're calling us blind? They're starting to maybe catch on to what Jesus is saying. Jesus said, if you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure. So their inability to humble themselves and learn something new in Jesus meant that they were blind, and now they were going to be accountable for every fault and failure because they refused to humble themselves before Jesus, the Messiah, the one that they said they were waiting for. But when he came, most of the Pharisees didn't. Most of these religious leaders didn't accept Jesus. So the Pharisees are blind. The thing is, they don't know it. Now, a Pharisee in that day equals a religious leader. It equals someone who is supposed to shepherd the people. That's really important for what we're about to hear Jesus say in the next discourse. Now, we also have to realize at this time, Jesus has been in conflict with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the other religious leaders, the scribes as well, for about 3 years or more. And now that conflict has gotten to its peak. It is not going to get any worse than this. It's really bad. It's getting to the very top. All right. And so Jesus has been in Jerusalem for several months. He's been there through the autumn, and now he's there in the winter. He was there for the Passover. He was there for the Feast of Tabernacles, and now he's there for Hanukkah. Hanukkah, unlike the other festivals, is a more recent festival to the Jews at this time. It's about 200 years old at the time of this writing. And what happened was the temple had been desecrated. There was a Greek monarch who came, and he installed priests, corrupt priests, which is another important thing for us to remember. And then there was the Maccabean Wars, and the Maccabean Wars put everything straight back the way it was supposed to be in the Jewish religion. So at this period of time, a lot of the synagogues would have been reading from some particular verses in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 34, 2 through 10. And so I want to read those for you today so you'll get a sense of the climate of the time in which Jesus is going to make his comments and say what he's going to say. So here's what Isaiah said. The word of the Lord came to me, Ezekiel, and he said, "Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. You have not strengthened the weak or healed the sick or bound up the injured." Imagine this is what the Pharisees would be hearing around this time of the year as they went to worship. "You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, because my flock lacks a shepherd, and so has been plundered and has become food for all the wild animals, and because my shepherds did not search for my flock, but cared for themselves rather than for my flock, therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. I will remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I will rescue my flock from their mouths and it will no longer be food for them." I can't imagine being a Pharisee, a Sadducee, a scribe, sitting in the synagogue and hearing that, and they're not maybe being some little thing that might say to me, "Man, I think I can be a better shepherd. You know, maybe I'm not being the best shepherd I can. What, Lord, how can I be a better shepherd?" I can't imagine hearing that and not having that response as someone who, like myself, is a religious leader. That's what they were hearing when Jesus says what he's going to say in a little bit here. So after the incident with the blind man, during a time when they're having really a critique and a reading of the and reflecting on the failed leadership of the past in their country, ancient and recent, John records this, and this is John's final public address that he records Jesus saying publicly. Here it is. John 10, we're going to read 1 through 13. If you want to grab a Bible from underneath the chairs, this is page 759. John 10, 1 through 13, page 759. Jesus says, "I tell you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought them all out of his own, he goes on ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. Verse 5, but they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. So, trying to make sense of this passage, what was Jesus getting at? At the very least, we understand that Jesus is setting forth a contrast between the false shepherds and the good shepherd. On the one hand, he says the false shepherd climbs in some other way. He's a thief and a robber. Back in those days, people might have sheep pens on the side of their houses. They would put up a rock wall, some kind of structure. They would put briar thorn bushes on the top of those rock walls to keep people from coming in over the side. So this was an image that they very much would have understood. Jesus says, you've come over the side. You didn't come in through the gate. You're a false shepherd. Jesus says, I am a true shepherd. I come through the gate. I come through the right way. I go to where the watchman is, and the watchman lets me in. He says of the false shepherds that the sheep don't listen to them. They don't know his voice. I know nothing about sheep, but I'm told that sheep will not follow the voice of a stranger. Jesus says that he knows his sheep by name, and the sheep listen to his voice. I'm told if you came to a pen where there was different flocks in a pen, which they would sometimes do because they couldn't have their own pen, or they would pay one watchman, but they might have two or three different flocks in there. I'm told that when you go to where the watchman is, if you start talking in your voice as a shepherd, the sheep that know your voice will begin to come to the gate and they'll come out with you to pasture. Or some of them had a flute, which would be their voice, and they would play this instrument. And the sheep that would recognize, that's my shepherd, and they would come out. Jesus says that the false shepherd, the sheep won't follow him. In fact, they will run away from him. But he says, as a good shepherd, I go ahead of the sheep, and the sheep follow me. Now, the Pharisees did not get it when the blind man was healed, and they do not get it when Jesus tells this first part of the story. Had they gotten that, I don't know, Jesus may not have continued, I don't know, but they didn't get it, and so he continues. But what he does is he changes the metaphors. He was talking about the good shepherd, and then he changes his imagery to now talk about the gate. So I don't like that. You know, as someone who's listening, I'm trying to understand something. He's saying something about being a shepherd. Now he changes it and he says, I'm the gate. I'm getting confused, you know, already, if I'm one of the Pharisees. But here's what he says about this part about being the gate. He says that there are thieves and robbers. He says, essentially, if you understand what he's saying, he says that the Pharisees and others who have come before them are trying to enter in the wrong way. He is the gate, and they are trying to enter in a different way. They're not recognizing that he's the gate. The sheep did not listen to the Pharisees. In this case, we know the blind man, when the Pharisees came to him and tried to talk him out of Jesus being Messiah, it really emboldened his faith. At first, he said, well, I think he's a prophet. He's a good guy. You know, he healed me. And then as the Pharisees tried to kind of talk him out of it, his faith grew and grew and grew until when he met with Jesus afterwards, he was full-blown faith, ready to receive Christ. So the sheep do not listen to thieves and robbers. The sheep enter through this gate and are saved. Now the thieves and robbers, their motivation is to steal, to kill, and to destroy. That's what the outcome is if you listen to the voice of the thieves and the robbers. But if you listen to the voice of Jesus, he says, you will have life and you will have it to the full. So that's kind of the second section of what Jesus said. And then there's one more section. He continues on. And he says, the false shepherds are basically hired hands. You pay them and they watch the sheep. It's a good, decent arrangement. Except Jesus says, there is a shepherd who owns the sheep. And the shepherd who owns the sheep is going to take more responsibility for them and more care of them. He says the false sheep, or the false shepherd, when he sees a wolf come, he's going to abandon the flock and that flock's going to get scattered. But when it comes to the good shepherd, he's going to lay down his life for the sheep. So now Jesus has flipped the metaphor back again and he's gone back to the shepherd. So you could kind of be confused by this if you're the Pharisees, but if we don't understand anything, we understand Jesus has created a stark contrast between the people who go through the gate, the people who don't go through the gate, the poor shepherds and the good shepherd. Now, this is the peak of the conflict, at least in the book of John. What is Jesus' main point here at this peak of the conflict? His main point is this. The religious leaders of my day are not good shepherds. They are the shepherds that we found back in Ezekiel, who Ezekiel was preaching against. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Now, during that time, they spoke of gods, small g, and they spoke of great men of that time as shepherds. So when Jesus talked about being a shepherd, he was pulling on an imagery that they well understood already. And of course, it was also a society when there were lots of shepherds everywhere. And so this imagery was in their minds. It was very detailed. They understood this. When Jesus says that he's a good shepherd, what he's saying is that he's noble, that he has character, unlike the other shepherds, that he is beautiful, that he is superior to those other shepherds. I mean, if you understand what Jesus is saying, he's saying, I'm not just a shepherd. I am the good shepherd. And in the Greek literature, if you read back in the Greek literature of this time, you will know that when they talked about a gate, they talked about a gate which you would have to go through to enter into heaven. This was an imagery that they well understood. All right, so Jesus is being very clear about who he is here in this passage. Now, the question I have for us this morning is, whose voice are we going to listen to? Are we going to listen to the voice of the one who climbs over the wall through the thorns? Or are we going to listen to the voice of the good shepherd? Now, in the last week or two, we've had a situation where some of our computers, not mine, mine actually just died. It wasn't ransomware, just the motherboard crashed. But so around the country and around the world, there was this ransomware scare. Somebody climbed, didn't log into those computers. They climbed in, not through the gate, but through some other way, and infected these computers and sought to extract money from those people, to destroy them in a sense. And what Jesus is saying is very similar to that, that these religious leaders have climbed in a different way and that they are eventually going to kill and destroy the spiritual lives of the people that they are supposed to be shepherding. So the reality for us in this text is that following destructive voices will prevent spiritual life. If I'm not a believer in Jesus and I listen to the wrong voices, it will prevent me from entering into this gate. And Jesus is saying this is the gate into heaven. He's not saying it's a gate. It's the gate. He is the gate into heaven. And if I listen to the wrong voices, I will never enter into that gate. I know for 10 years of my life, I was listening to the wrong voices. And I didn't really want anything to do with this gate. I was running in the other direction. But for those of us who have spiritual life, who know who Jesus is, we know his identity, it's also true that spiritual life can be diminished, it can be shrunk, it can be destroyed in a sense by listening to other voices. Now, all of us, I believe, are susceptible, and I think that's why Jesus characterized us as sheep. We're not really that smart. We're kind of smelly. Sometimes we have too much wool or whatever. Jesus was not like trying to give us a big head when he said, you are sheep. We're the lowest of the low, in a sense. But here it is. You know, some of us are physically, we're not doing so well. Some of us have tight finances. Some of us, our marriage is hard. Our mental health isn't doing well. It's out of balance. Things perhaps didn't go our way in a certain situation that we really wanted to go our way. We may be in a new season of life, or we may be parenting and we find parenting really stressful. For some of us, there's someone in here that's really waiting on God for something. You're waiting for a word from the Lord about something. Or you may be extending yourself for someone that you love, maybe even overextending yourself. For someone, you're here and you're overworked, whether it's in work or in ministry. Some of you are starting over, like from the very bottom, starting over again. Some of us are in situations that we can't control. Some of us are grieving. Some of us have really challenging transitions, either right now or ahead of us. I mention all those things because all those things can put us in a place where we're susceptible to other voices. Now, when we're susceptible, why are we susceptible? Well, we want an answer. We want a voice. We want a solution. And sometimes we'll take anything. Any old voice will do. And those voices could be religious leaders. It could be the TV. It could be the media. It could be our family, our friends. Anything really could serve as a voice. The thing is, 99% of the voices that we hear during the week will not get us to real life, will not get us to the better life that Jesus talked about in this passage. So what leads us to real and better life? Well, Jesus says, he says to us that we are sheep. I want you to say, I am a sheep.
I am a sheep.
All right, we are sheep. And to get to the green pastures that Jesus talks about, the real and better life, we have to walk through this gate. Jesus said, I am the way. He said, I am the way. He didn't say, I am a way. He said, I am the way. And that passage in John correlates with what he said here. He said, I am the gate. Really, everything hinges on this gate. The way you're going to live your life right now is living it in anticipation that you've walked through this gate and that someday you're going to walk through the gates of heaven. After you've walked through this gate, you know, we're looking forward to a new home. And so everything hinges on this gate, your life now and your life forever in eternity. And this morning, Jesus is calling someone's name. I don't know if it's someone in this room or I don't know if it's someone that's going to listen to this on the internet. Jesus is calling your name right now. He's standing at the gate. He is the gate. He's the good shepherd. And he's standing there and he's calling your name out of all those sheep that are in the pen. He's calling you to come out to green pastures. He's calling you to himself. And I hope today you can recognize that it's his voice. And I hope that you'll respond to that voice and walk through this gate. There's a young girl here in the church. Her name is Carolina. And I have an affinity with Carolina and her brothers and sisters because she's half Puerto Rican, and I'm half Puerto Rican. So whenever I say Carolina, I say her name. Now, when she was young, she paid no attention to me. She got scared. She put her head away. But every time I saw her, I said, Carolina, and I'd smile at her. And after a couple of years now, I was out to eat with their family, and I'm sitting there, I'm eating, and I'm talking, whatever. She leaves her mother, she climbs down, she walks all the way around the booths at the restaurant, and she comes up to me and she goes like this. She wanted to sit in my lap. This girl who has been very shy for, you know, a long time, many, many months, hearing my voice over and over and over and over every Sunday, every time I see the family outside of church, Carolina. She tuned into my voice eventually, and she realized I'm someone that she can trust. Today, Jesus is calling your name, and perhaps he's been calling it and calling it and calling it and calling it. Maybe today is the day that you trust him. So we got to walk through this gate or knock it over, one of the two. There are some amazing pastures on the other side of this gate. Peace, safety, blessing, spiritual fruit, contentment, fearlessness, freedom, plenty of food on the other side of the gate. We will know God and he will know us. I took that from a scripture, by the way. So walk through the gate this morning. If you've already walked through the gate, I want to talk to you about following the shepherd. That's what it's all about. Before we walk through the gate, it's all about walking through the gate. Everything hinges on the gate. After we walk through the gate, it's all about following the shepherd. Now, I have a phone, and I have this thing called Siri on my phone, and my girls are amazed. If I say, "Hey, Siri," my phone responds to me. That's all I have to say is, "Hey, Siri." "Hey, Siri, how can I help you?" This phone is programmed to my voice. My girls the other day, they were yelling, "Hey, Siri, hey, Siri, hey, Siri." And they did not get a response because Siri doesn't know them, doesn't know their voice. We need to be programmed to hear the voice of Jesus because there are so many voices in this world. The other day, they had me say, "Hey, Siri," while they were saying, "Hey, Siri." And they're yelling and screaming it, and I'm trying to say it. Siri couldn't hear my voice over all the other voices. So when we're following the shepherd, to follow the shepherd, we have to tune out all those other voices. I want to ask you today, what are some of those voices that have gotten louder and louder and louder and louder and are drowning out the voice of Jesus in your life? I want to encourage you to tune out those other voices and tune into the voice of Jesus. Also, to follow the shepherd, Jesus says that we're supposed to run from those false shepherds. If we're going to follow the good shepherd, we've got to run from those who are false shepherds. Joseph, a story in the Old Testament, someone tempts him to sin. It says he left his jacket there, like he had to get away. The person went to grab him. He left, and he left his jacket there. He ran from temptation. And right now, I know there's someone here, and you are kind of flirting with sin. You're there. You're thinking about it, whatever. I want to encourage you, if you really want to follow the shepherd, it's time to move. It's time to run. It's time to flee that temptation. So to follow the shepherd, we have to do that. What we also see from this passage is that we follow the shepherd who knows our name. What does that mean to you today? When I say that Jesus knows your name, that the good, the noble, the beautiful, the superior shepherd knows your name. Remember those situations I mentioned earlier that make us susceptible because we're sheep? I want you to pick one of those. Which one of those fits you today? If none of them fit you, make up one. You know, you have something that fits you today that makes you susceptible. And I want to ask you that question is, what does it mean to you today that Jesus knows your name in that situation? In that situation, does that encourage you? Does that lift you up? Does it maybe convict you? I don't know. In verses 14 and 15 of the passage that we looked at today in John chapter 10, it says, "I know my sheep and my sheep know me." All right, I was doing pretty good when I read that part. And then I read, "Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father." I said, wait a minute. Do I know Jesus and does Jesus know me? Just as the Father knows the Son. When I look at Jesus and the Father, I see this intertwined relationship. I see how close they are, how intimate they are, that they're inseparable, that Jesus always does what the Father tells him to do. There's no difference between them. They're all together. And then I look and I say, do I know Jesus that way? Does Jesus know me that way? That's our model. We're going to follow this shepherd who knows our name. He's calling us into deeper relationship with him every single day. And we can have that kind of relationship with him just as he has with the Father. We can have with him. To follow the shepherd, we follow this shepherd who goes ahead of us. Jesus is very clear about this, that he doesn't drive the sheep from behind. I saw at a fair once that they had these sheepdogs. And the guy had like three or four dogs, and he was making those sheep go wherever he wanted them to go by moving the sheepdogs. He'd tell that sheepdog move forward a little bit and tell that one to move back. And he had this elaborate system of telling the dogs what to do to get the sheep to go through a small passage like even like this. Amazing. Jesus doesn't do that. He gets out ahead and he leads the way. He doesn't drive us. He said that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. So we're following the shepherd who goes on ahead of us. I don't know what you're facing right now, but maybe that word is for you. Now, we also follow the shepherd who takes us to lush pastures. I don't have a lot to say about this morning, but one thing I can tell you from my study this week, as I spent the last 2 weeks in this passage, I ended up, when I looked at it and I was trying to come down to what was I going to say to you as far as application today, I had like 5 or 6 pages. There was so much that I learned from this passage. I said, this could be, you know, a series of messages. You see, when we walk through that gate and we follow Jesus, he takes us to his word, and his word is so rich. The nutrients in the grass where he takes us are amazing. You know what my challenge was today? Was not, what am I going to tell you today, which was a challenge. It was, what am I not going to tell you? There was so much that I could have shared today, but I had to get it down to, what does our congregation need to hear today where we are? All that to say that there are lush pastures, and it's not just because I'm a pastor that when I go through the gate and I eat in those fields, like, well, that's good for me, but it's not for you. If you've gone through that gate, the grass on the other side is just as green for you, and you can get what you need out of the word just like I can. Next, to follow the shepherd, we have to stick together. We're part of a flock. And Jesus makes that clear. He says that the flock can be scattered or the flock can be behind their shepherd. One flock, one shepherd. And I want to encourage our church today that there are a lot of things, a lot of voices we can listen to, a lot of things that we can say. But the most important thing is that we are one flock with one shepherd. We're following the good shepherd. And if we forget everything else and focus on that, that would be a good thing. We are one flock under one shepherd. And that means we've got to stick together. We've got to work together. And sometimes there may be sheep that don't like each other, but we stick together and we'll work things out. Why? Not because it's about us, not because it's about another person, because we're following the shepherd together. That's why we're here. That's why we do what we do. And we got to keep coming back to that. And then Jesus will not let us forget the lost sheep, will he? He says in this passage as well, to follow the shepherd, we have to make room for more sheep. It's not just about getting along with the sheep that are already in the pen. He says, by the way, I have some sheep that are in another pen, and I've got to get them into this pen. There it is. I have other sheep that are not of this pen, and I must bring them in also. Verse 16. I want you to think of a group of people that if they step foot in this church in large numbers, that would be really disturbing to you. Maybe Democrats or Republicans or Tea Party people, or I don't know, a certain nationality, immigrants. I don't know what that title would be for you. But if those people started showing up here in large numbers, it would disturb you. That's exactly what was going to happen to the people that Jesus was talking to here. They were Jewish people. And he said, I've got other sheep I need to bring into this pen. And he doesn't tell them here, really, but they're going to be sheep that they don't want in the pen, that they've kept their distance from. And I want to tell you that the church isn't about you. Jesus said it's about also bringing other sheep into the fold, and in some cases, sheep that you might not want in the fold. I heard it said that when we get to heaven, we're going to be surprised who's there. We're going to see people that we thought weren't going to be there, and we're not going to see some people we thought were going to be there. But as a church, we have to remind ourselves that it's not just about us. I want you to look, there's some empty seats here today, right? Jesus says, make room for people, pray for people that could fill those seats, that you could be a blessing to. And now I want to move us toward the Lord's table. And in John 10, 17 through 18, we haven't read this yet. Jesus says, the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it back up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have the opportunity to lay it down, and the authority to take it up. This command I received from my Father. So this morning, as we have this table set before us, Jesus thought it important to tell us that he had the authority to lay his life down, and he had the authority to take it back up again. Jesus died. He had the authority to die for us, to take care of all our sins. He also had the authority to rise from the dead. So I want to take a moment to pray. And if you've never walked through this gate, you really haven't known Jesus personally in your life, I want to pray for you first. And I would encourage you, if you heard Jesus calling your name today, if you felt like that was you, I encourage you to pray this prayer. Jesus, thank you for showing me who you are today. Thank you for showing me that I have to go through you to get to the Father. And I've recognized that I'm a sheep. I recognize that I don't know my own way, that I have gone my own way. And I recognize that I must come through you. And I am ready to receive you. I am ready to walk through that gate. I'm ready to follow you. I'm ready to give you my life, not just so you can save me for eternity, but so that you can be Lord, so you can be that good shepherd, so that I can allow you to do whatever it is you want to do in my life, so that you can bring me to those green pastures, the real and better life that you have for me. So I walk through that gate today, and I do it in the powerful name of Jesus. And for those of us who are Christians, I offer you this prayer as we accept the Lord's body and the Lord's blood. Jesus, we recognize you as better than Moses, who said he would give his life for Israel. We see that you're better than David, who literally tried to lay down his life for his sheep. When the bear came and the lion came, he risked his life. But Jesus, you're the only one that gave your life for us, and you're the only one that could give your life for us, and it would matter for our sins. So thank you for what you've done for us. Thank you for saving us. Thank you for treating us kindly, for putting us around your shoulders and bringing us back into the fold, back into the family of God. Amen.